Today's episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial by visiting geektherapy.com/audible. Welcome to Psych Tech on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. We are a psychology and technology show. My name is Josue Cardona with Kelly Dunlap. And today we're going to talk about two articles that we found that, Kelly, to me sound almost like Black Mirror episodes. I don't know if you feel
the
same way.
Yes, yes.
And they both have to do with avatars. And it's funny, we've talked in the past about avatars in the context of gaming. Do you have like a broad definition or explanation of what an avatar is?
It is a digital representation of yourself or what you'd want to be.
Or any representation, really, right? Because it doesn't have to be necessarily what you want to be, right? You could be anything.
A digital representation of a self. How about that?
Yeah. Well, because I'm thinking, because sometimes you can choose your avatar, but sometimes an avatar is chosen for you. And like you have no choice. It's just to represent someone, right? In a digital space.
So I've got story, and I'm going to share to help bring us into this avatar thing. So I am like one of the very few people on Earth that never got into Harry Potter. Like I tried, and I couldn't. And I was convinced by some of my coworkers last night to go to Pottermore and find out what my Patronus is. Mm-hmm. And so I answered a bunch of questions, and apparently I'm a badger. Mm-hmm. So that's cool, but. And so that's kind of a way of thinking about it for any of the Potterheads out there, that your Patronus could be like your avatar. It's a representation of something other than yourself that has some kind of meaning or value inherent in it.
I don't know how much Potterheads would agree, but thank you for sharing your Patronus story.
as someone who doesn't know, I was really excited that I'm a badger, and I like to think that I'm a honey badger. So I just really wanted to share that somehow, and that's how I worked it in. So I'm thinking of my Harry Potter avatar as a badger, and I'm probably totally wrong and we'll get hate mail, but that's okay.
Well, the first story that I want to talk about has to do with an animal, not a badger, but just like a cute puppy, a very cute puppy. And when I read this article, first of all, I immediately thought of you, and I thought, hey, we could talk about tech and puppies on the show. I was sure you'd be in, but
what could be better?
Yeah. It's made for us. So this is just amazing, right? So the article that I found, it's a Wired article, and it's called "The Digital Puppy That Keeps Seniors Out of Nursing Homes." And I think, well, at least that's the headline that caught my attention. I think the actual article has something different about tech taking care of our aging population. So it talks about this service where elderly people are given a tablet that has a digital avatar on the screen, a puppy. That puppy acts as a caretaker. It is not it's not controlled by artificial intelligence. It's not software. It is a person sitting in one of the examples that they gave in Latin America. I think Rodrigo in the example is in Mexico. There's people in the Philippines also that are sitting there on their computer in a home office and then seeing through the tablet and speaking through the tablet. And the elderly person sees this puppy and is interacting with the puppy. And then the person, like this guy isn't Rodrigo sitting there talking to his clients. He is role-playing as the puppy to take care of these people. And it kind of blew my mind. I'm curious what you thought when you read that article.
Well, I mean, anything that brings more puppies into my life is a positive thing. Right now, there actually is a special guest on the podcast that we did not introduce. Her name is Ellie. She's a beagle, and she's like 5 feet from me right now. I figured it would be important to have a subject matter expert in the room with us because Ellie is a therapy dog. So she knows all about being a dog and helping to comfort people. And so we'll see if she has anything to say later on, but she's napping right now. So who knows? But yeah, I mean, there's so many layers to this that it's such an interesting problem. So one, there is a rising issue with the elderly being lonely, and you know, loneliness is associated with a bunch of negative psychological outcomes. And, you know, wanting to check in on people, there's, I think the article also talked to concerns about the caregiver who was with this gentleman that they were doing the piece around, was actually caught like on a nanny cam being like verbally aggressive toward him. And so that's, I know, another concern for people who are having to deal with family members in need of extra care. And it's such a cute idea. And it almost feels a little bit like a grown-up Tamagotchi, you know, if instead of an algorithm, there was a human being behind it.
Except that the Tamagotchi takes care of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that to me is the most important part, that there's a human being on the other end. Like, because that to me just solves so many problems that we have, at least right now, with artificial intelligence and natural language processing. And these were all issues that that came up in the development of this app. So yeah, I think it's a really great idea. I do have a little bit of guilt, like, okay, we're offloading the care of our old people to you know, digital avatars. But you know, as we dive into this article, I think it comes across like how valuable and really needed this kind of technology is.
Yeah, like all of the best technology or the most successful technology today isn't. It's always a combination of people and technology, right? Like something like Uber or Lyft, it wouldn't be anything without the drivers, but the drivers couldn't do what they do without the service behind it. And like, they're both impressive together, right? They're super impressive together, and that's how you can get something like, you know, a revolution in taking a ride, right? And ride sharing has become so popular. And this is an example of that, right? Marrying the two. And it is so... like, it's really expensive to have somebody take care of an elderly parent, right? Like, let's put it in that context, right? I have to take care of my mom. I'm being hypothetical right now. My mom could still take care of me. But right, but let's say I need to take care of my mom, and it's so expensive to just have somebody check in, right? Or sometimes people just come in and like sit down to like give them a meal or watch them eat, right? And sometimes it's just reminding them of a few things. And so for those things that are basic tasks, I think I can see why this would be effective. It's not going to bathe them. It's not going to, you know, do a whole bunch of other things that require, you know, physically being there. But if you can take offload some of that and have a service like this that, like you said, also provides this sort of companionship, because even though there's somebody behind the avatar is always on, even though the person behind the avatar isn't always there. So you can feel some comfort in having the puppy there on the tablet and seeing it and kind of, you know, having it with you while you're watching TV. And then if you need it, you tap on it, and then the other person can come in and respond, and the person can chime in for medication or for having a meal or just, you know, checking in every now and then. I wonder like how much of a complete solution that actually is versus, like you mentioned, the nanny cam, right? Like the tablet has a camera, but you could have other cameras in the house also. And as the person in charge, you could monitor in other ways. And you could have, I don't know, like a smartwatch that is monitoring heart rate and all of these other things that could all come together. But that the idea of having some sort of companionship plus also checking in with the essentials is a really cool idea. And again, it's still just what blows my mind the most is they could have done it in a way where it was a real person, like just a Skype, right? Like the person on the other end is just looking at you. You're looking at them. You're talking to a person. But the example, the main story in this article is a man who his daughter describes him as someone who a few years ago would have wanted to know exactly how it works. Like, we're talking right now about the ins and outs and how it works and where these people are and every single piece of the puzzle. But right now, in his 90s, he's like, oh, there's a puppy here. Like, yeah, cool. You know, the type of care that he needs, this seems adequate for it. And not talking to an actual person doesn't matter, doesn't seem to matter to him right now. And he's so happy with this avatar. And there's a good reason to have something like an avatar, right, where you could switch the person behind it and it doesn't change the experience for you. Like something, you know, like in therapy, when you have to terminate with someone, it sucks. And then you have to start with another therapist. Imagine that if it was always like different therapists going through different avatars, right? You'd feel like this continuity of care that is just incredible. And it kind of avoids that sort of termination in the middle. And there's so many pieces to it that just make it fascinating. And on the like user experience side, but like, I can't stop thinking about the experience for the person on the other end either, who is role-playing as a puppy.
Yeah. I think that would be a really cool thing. Like, I'm trying to imagine what my puppy persona would be. And the article also mentioned that, you know, these caregivers, they take extensive notes so they can remember, like, the name of grandchildren and, you know, if they talked about this trip before and, they, you know, like, personal pieces of information so that the avatar puppy can respond in, like, in a way that seems consistent. Like, it's actually there and present with you at all times, which is super important because you wouldn't want – it would be really frustrating to go, no, puppy, I told you like 5 years ago, you know, I told you a million times that my grandson's name is Bob or, you know, whatever. So, I mean, to me, one of the most important things is that it is keeping people out of nursing homes that don't absolutely have to be there. Yeah. There's a lot of health research going on about how not only are nursing homes not always the best, even the most well-run ones are not the best scenarios that you can imagine, but that being home and surrounded by your own things is like immensely helpful to people who are experiencing cognitive decline or have any kind of emotional issues that are in need of support, because you're home, you're with your stuff, you're not in some sterile environment surrounded by beeps and bloops and nurses and other things that creep me out. So I think that's a huge, huge service that really can't be understated is, you know, for this gentleman that they're talking about, you know, he's still able, he needs some support, but he doesn't need to be removed from his home and you know, have somebody there 24/7, like in the flesh. And I feel like this this device is this nice intermediary. It's a step between, you know, being fully independent to being not independent. I saw this happen a lot with my grandmother when she started to decline, and she went from being like a very full functioning person and over years of decline. And it was really tough in those middle, like, because by the end, yes, she definitely needed to be in a nursing home. My grandfather couldn't take care of her. It was heartbreaking to have to go there. And it really, really sucked. But you could understand why she needed to be there. But in the years leading up to that, like, it was so frustrating because, yeah, she needs some support. She needs to make sure that, or I would like to make sure that she's okay. I want someone to remind her to take her medicine. You know, she needs to, might need some help, you know, getting up and down the stairs every now and then. But it's not like you need to remove her from her home. And I think about what it would have been like if I could have had this tool while she was doing that. Because not only would that help me, you know, keeping track of my grandmother who's, you know, getting older and getting ill, but it also would help me keep track of my grandfather who notoriously does not take care of himself. And again, by using a puppy, there's this kind of level of abstraction so that it doesn't feel like there's somebody there like watching, waiting, listening, you know, stalking your every movement, but just this friendly presence that you can talk to, that can help you out. You know, it might even be the modern version of the life alert, you know, help, I've fallen and I can't get up type of commercials, but way, 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 way better.
Yeah, because apparently this one, you just like pet the puppy to notify that you need something.
Yeah, anything where I'm petting a puppy, like I'm happy.
Yeah.
And it is interesting that it's a dog. I wonder if they will like expand because some people are cat people. And it would be really interesting to see if the connection that this particular gentleman felt with his puppy would be the same for somebody who, let's say, only ever had cats, or somebody who doesn't even like pets or never had one. I mean, that's a future research question. But I mean, I know from IRL experience, you know, bringing Ellie to, you know, rehab centers and elderly homes, they just, the people who are dog people, they just light up. There was one gentleman that Ellie would just bolt for because he, you know, while he was in his rehab, he was an older gentleman and had like hip surgery or something and was recovering. He had his kids bring him a giant box of dog biscuits. So that way, whenever the therapy dogs came around, he would give each of the dogs a biscuit. And he was, of course, Ellie's favorite. But they just, it's just so, there's not really even a word for it. Just watching them light up and, you know, be delighted and happy and smile and that warm fuzzy feeling that you can just feel coming off of them, because there is a dog. There's a dog there. And obviously the soft fuzzies might not come across in your digital avatar. Although I think maybe the next evolution of our digital puppy here might be, you know, you putting it inside an animal, you know, like a stuffed dog or something.
So do you remember there was, I forgot the name of it, but there was a white seal that was like physical,
yes!
Right? Remember that? Yeah. So they would take it to the nursing homes and people would, you know, pet it and play with it. And it was, I don't think it had any real sort of like caretaking role other than just, it was an animal with, it was a like a toy that acted like an animal. So people got that, you know, this what you're talking about, right? That effect that when Ellie comes into the room, they light up and they get so happy.
I think it purred or like wiggled. I don't know if
seals
purr.
Oh, it moved around. Yeah,
but it was
yeah.
like brrrr, yeah. or something like that.
And it was, I believe it was designed for that purpose. And you know, there's a TV show called Humans in the US. They show it on AMC, and it's about essentially androids, right, who are in the world and they serve at the pleasure of the humans. And there's this one character in the first season who has an android who, after so many years, has begun to serve this same kind of role for him. Like he's got cognitive decline. He can't remember a lot of things. And the android helps him remember all sorts of stuff. Now, these androids are on the show. They're played by people and they have maybe like different color eyes or something. Right. And that's it. But they're close enough to people where they can do the job. But I think the gap between a real person or an android that is almost like a real person to like showing a person on the screen, it's not the same, right? So I can see why you would go with some sort of cute avatar or some sort of animal. Like the new Sony Aibo was announced or was shown at CES, and I've wanted an Aibo for over 10 years.
I don't even know what an Aibo is.
It's Sony's robot dog. And they used to, it even showed up like on MTV's Real World one season, right? They had it in the house. Like it's really, really expensive. And they haven't made one in years. And now there's a new version and it has OLED eyes. So they're way more expressive than ever before. And it learns and it goes to, you know, it goes and it charges itself. And I don't know. It's I've always wanted one of those pets, but I can see something like this service that we're talking about is called Care Coach being integrated into something like an Aibo. Although that would be way more expensive, right? We're talking about a cheap Android tablet with their software running on it, hooked up to Wi-Fi, versus a $1,500 small robot.
Yeah, that's the future. We're future casting, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think you bring up a really great point that another strength of this particular tech is that it is so cheap. I mean, I guess cheap is a relative term, but you know, the fact that you only need Wi-Fi and a tablet for it to function,
yeah.
I think that addresses a lot of issues that a lot of times newer helpful tech just can't address because of cost.
Both of my grandparents, my grandmothers, they lived very, very different lives. And in their later years, they had very, very different experiences also. My dad's mom is currently living in her son's home with her own room, her TV. She's got her own fridge in there. People are always coming in and out of the house. There's a lot of family in the area. People are always visiting her. She has a cell phone. She calls her sisters every day. She has a very different experience than my mom's grandmother, my mom's mom, who was very alone most of the time, was not as close to family. And in her later, she died last year, but she did develop Alzheimer's. She ended up in a nursing home. And like one of the saddest things I ever heard my mom tell me was she would come to visit her and it had been hours since anybody had gone to check on her, even in the nursing home. And she would find my grandmother like bent over and unable to like lift herself up in a chair. That type of thing is oh, like, first of all, it makes me mad. But I think, too, like, what would it have been like if she had something like one of these puppies, a Care Coach, right? Would she have lasted longer? Would she have been happier? Would things like that where she spent, I don't know how long, you know, where nobody had checked on her, would that have been avoided? And but I also don't know, like, knowing my grandmother, I don't know how she would have reacted to using a tablet because she was... Like just like my other grandmother has a cell phone. I don't know how this other grandmother would have, like, she was way more tech averse too. I'm also asking myself, like, man, like, what would it have been like if she had something like this? And I can't help but future forecast also, like, what would these things look like, or what will they look like in the future as we keep advancing the technology? And can you, in a couple of years, will we be able to have something like this where it integrates with a smartwatch, right? Where you have the puppy on your watch, but it's also on the tablet. Like, you can go back and forth. So you don't depend. Like, I think a smartwatch with Care Coach installed would have been more my grandmother's style, because she didn't have to carry it around. Also, she wouldn't have forgotten where she placed it and things like that. There's a lot of potential. But I still can't believe that somebody is role-playing a puppy on the other side.
I think that's delightful. I mean, I caring for the elderly can be very challenging, especially emotionally challenging work. And so I wonder what the effect is on the caregiver themselves, because they're not just a caregiver. They are playing a role. And so I'd be fascinated to do or to hear about any kind of studies about, you know, burnout rates or things like that, and compare it to other forms of elder care and see, you know, maybe playing as a puppy has some kind of protective factor for the caregiver. That would be a double win.
Do you like audiobooks? I love audiobooks. As a podcast listener, I hope you're interested in audiobooks. I'm a very slow reader. So anytime on the show I've said that I just read a book, I didn't read the book. I actually listened to the audiobook. And I wanted to tell you about one book that I think it might be relevant to your interest if you like psych tech. It's called The Inevitable by Kevin Kelly. Kevin Kelly was one of the founders of Wired Magazine. And he has this book. The full title is The Inevitable: Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. We talked about the book a while back on the show, and it's a little over a year old, but I still think it's really good. I still think it's very relevant. It has some really cool ideas about how advanced AI is practically going to be an alien race when we encounter it. We won't know how to really communicate with it. It's very cool. And so if you don't have Audible and you want to check it out for free, you can go to geektherapy.com/audible and get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial. And you can check out The Inevitable. Audible has something called a Great Listen Guarantee. So if you don't like The Inevitable, you can just return it and get another book. It's pretty great. So again, for a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial, go to geektherapy.com/audible. So there's another article, like, we'll keep jumping back and forth because these two things are connected, but there's another article. The one I found was on BBC, and it said, Avatar Therapy Reduces Power of Schizophrenia Voices. This one blows my mind just as much, because I've never treated anyone with schizophrenia. I've never had a client who had schizophrenia. So I have never dealt with hallucinations or hearing voices or anything like that. Have you?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
So I'm really curious how you feel about this article, right? And essentially what it's talking about is a study that was done where the theory is that if you could put a face, right? Just like we're talking about this puppy as an avatar, if you could give an avatar to the voices, that you would be able to, how would they frame it? I think not control them, but deal with them better, right? Like by being able to give them a face, essentially. And that was the theory. And according to the study that was published, they were successful in many cases with helping people deal with the auditory hallucinations by essentially giving them a face.
So from my clinical experience, one of the things that made me, I wanted to know more after reading that article was, you know, yes, the avatar experiment group improved faster, but all they said about the non-treatment condition was the same amount of therapy. And so I'm genuinely very curious, you know, what therapy did those other 75 people receive? Because from when I have worked with clients with schizophrenia, and of course it depends entirely on the client and their presentation and, you know, how severe it is, but like confronting those voices and disempowering those voices is a really big part of how I worked with clients who were experiencing auditory hallucinations. So to me, the idea of having an avatar that you create and you face down, and I was like, well, yeah, I mean, that seems like it works. And because it's kind of like the digital version of what interventions that already exist.
Yeah.
And so I'm just really curious about what that control group got. Because if it was just, say, like supportive therapy, you know, there's tons of literature saying supportive therapy doesn't really do much for schizophrenia, at least not when it comes to like hallucinations. So that's my first question. That said, I think it's really awesome. I think the idea of taking the voice in your head and turning it into something that you can physically see and manipulate, like that's huge. Because what that does is that it separates you from the voice. And it helps for people to conceptualize that this is not me. This is this other thing that has attached itself to me. It's something that I can fight. It's something that I can face. And so, yeah, I think that's super the rate at which people improved to me was super interesting. And I wish they had gone into more detail.
The other part of it is that once the person kind of helped create the avatar for that face, then the therapist would control the avatar and respond through it. And so, again, we're talking about role playing. We're talking about role playing in a way to help other people. So the therapist is responding as the avatar. So the person can, like you said, separate themselves completely from the avatar. And now it's not only something that you see that's separate from you, you're having a conversation that's separate from you completely.
Yeah, it's external. And yeah, the therapist being in the back, being able to, you know, repeat, you know, statements like, I'm going to burn the building down, just to quote Office Space, not to stereotype people with hallucinations, but quoting Office Space on that one, or you're not good enough, or you're terrible, or pretty much anything the voices in Hellblade, the video game that dealt with psychosis, talked about. And, you know, being able to face those is important. But the nice thing about this is that it lets you practice without actually having to have the hallucination happen. And mm-hmm. So you kind of build up the mental strength, and just the repetition of, you know, you're not real, or I don't need to listen to you, you're not in control of me. Those kind of positive affirmation statements that are helpful in combating like command or scary auditory hallucinations. It's good to practice it. And yeah. And that way, and with the therapist on the end, they can switch it up. You know, they can throw in a monkey wrench to see, not that they would, but, you know, they can shift things slightly to change the context or how it sounds or how angry or how intense it is. Things that would be really hard to do and respond to efficiently and effectively if it wasn't a human behind the mirror.
And yeah, I hadn't thought about the control part, right? Like once you're hearing a voice, you can't necessarily stop it, right? Like it's hard, but to be able to turn it on and off at will while you're practicing has got to be incredibly powerful and helpful.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like when you do desensitization training, you know, for people mm-hmm. with anxiety, is that you expose them to a stimuli that creates in them anxiety, and then you help work them through it. And if at any point it becomes too overwhelming, you remove that anxious stimuli. So that way somebody doesn't get to the point where they're panicking. And I feel like this is a really similar kind of process in that you can introduce somebody, you can even start with like a really gentle or neutral statement like, I am the voice inside your head and you want to eat a pickle. I mean, obviously, the clinicians would have a better script than I just came up off the top of my head. But you could actually start really non-threatening like that and build up somebody's confidence. And so it's not like you're just diving in with, you know, burn it all, but you're starting someplace so they can actually achieve success and build confidence so that they can do it on their own.
Yeah. The way that the role playing is done in the background is so different in both of these instances, where the puppy, the voice that's coming from the dog is actually, it's the Google Assistant voice, right? The Google voice, the female version, apparently, so far. Although there is a male version now. They didn't mention in the article. But so you choose that, and the person is typing things, and then the dog is like, the voice coming out of the dog is always the same. It doesn't matter who's behind him, right? Who's controlling it. So I mean, my point there is that it's always consistent. Doesn't matter who's there, and there isn't really the role playing aspect is easier. You may have your own personality and the way that you write things, but you would probably adjust that depending on who you're talking to, right? Maybe certain words, certain comments, but there isn't acting involved. And I wonder how much that plays a role in the avatar therapy with the doctor and the voices. Because are you changing your voice? Is it always my voice coming through the avatar? Like, how much more effective would it be if there were more, I don't know, like more theater behind it, right? Or more effects to my voice or something like that? Because I'm assuming that everybody who was in that trial knew that the person voicing the voice was their doctor.
Right. I think it'd be really fascinating if you could somehow figure out a way to make the voice coming out of the avatar as close to the voice that the person is hearing. Because a lot of times in psychosis where you're having auditory hallucinations, the voices can be anything. They can be a child's voice, they can be a woman's voice, they can be a man's voice, they can be scared, they can be threatening. So you know, they and depending on how many you are experiencing, that would modulate it as well. And I would imagine that the closer you could get to not only saying the same things that the voice is saying, because at least the patient can convey that to you, but saying it in the same way with like the same prosody and the same tone and the same intensity, I think that being able to add that kind of complexity to it, if it's possible, would only benefit the outcome. Because again, the closer you can get it to simulating what it's like in real life, quote unquote, the better your outcomes are going to be. You know, it's kind of that idea of like studying in context, that if you study in the same spot, you're going to retain more just because the environment is the same and the cues are the same. Whereas I think that might help the therapy. And of course, they said in the article they need to do more research, and there's lots of interesting work to be done down the road for it. But yeah, I think it's super interesting that in both of these situations, technology is being used to help humans, you know, communicate and support one another, but in like completely different ways. You know, one is a really cute puppy making sure you take your medications, and the other is a psychologist saying the things that your scary hallucinations say. And it's a little ironic and kind of funny, but I'm super glad to see it being used effectively to address anything from, you know, elderly isolation to schizophrenia.
Not only very different, but in the avatars really have completely opposite kind of like philosophies, because you want the puppy to be a cartoon and you want it to be fake, right? You want it doesn't matter who's behind it. And then you want the schizophrenia avatar to be as real as you can possibly make it. Like the pictures that were in that article were like, those were not good looking avatars. Like there are video games with way better avatar creators than what that seems to have. They don't even look that real, right? It's not even close to the uncanny valley, right? Which is where like things are seem real, but you can tell that they're not real. Like this is very far from real, especially if the voice coming from them is always the same. We probably strive for more realism in that one and strive for way less realism in the puppy example, but both with the same goal in mind. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. And just one more thing on the avatar therapy is it just reminds me so much of like traditional role play therapy, or if you want to kick it old school, you know, psychodrama, where you take on personas and you act them out, and, you know, to give you practice confronting the things that scare you. And but yeah, I think your observation that one is supposed to be as accurate as possible and the other one is supposed to be as not realistic as possible is, I think it just goes to show the strength and versatility of avatars, you know, whether they are close to reality or far from it, that there's uses for them. There's not necessarily one that's better or worse. You just need to find the kind of portrayal that is going to best fit your need.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think about my grandmother, and I think she probably wouldn't have liked a cute puppy on screen. She probably would have preferred a real looking person. That she probably would have preferred something much more realistic than something cartoony. And I don't know, maybe someone might prefer the same thing with the avatar therapy. Something like maybe the way they imagine it is not like a real person. It's very possible. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's the fun thing about humans is you just never know. You just never know what they're going to want. You can have the best laid plans and the human brain is like, nope, I'm not cooperating with you today. So there. Ha. That's my brain voice. So if someone is trying to process, you know, what their brain sounds like, feel free to take my voice and refute it, if you would like, if that helps.
I think that's going to do it for today for this episode of Psych Tech. You can find more Psych Tech at psychtechpodcast.com, at Psych Tech Cast on Twitter. I am Josue A. Cardona on Twitter. Kelly is Kelly and Dunlap. Thank you for joining us. Let us know your thoughts on cute avatar puppies, real puppies, avatars for voices, everything.
If you want to talk about real puppies, please get at me because I am all about talking puppies. You can just fill up my Twitter feed with puppy pictures and I will be your best friend.
Any robot puppies, talk to me about that. I'm all about the robot puppies. So thank you for joining us, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. You just listened to Psych Tech on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. For more about Geek Therapy and our other podcasts, visit geektherapy.com. And for extra content, including our monthly book club and other perks, consider supporting us for as little as $1 a month at our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/geektherapy.